your story of just trying to tweak things, try something different, go forward with something, do something that's difficult, do something that's hard. Boy, that's a message and a practice that more of us need to embrace. Just doing something hard because it's hard.
Yeah. And I think that has really come out of this for me, right? From the Boston bombing through just the distance training and this amazing, you know, 7-day event is take on the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Sign up for it.
Welcome to The Aggressive Life. It's a good day today. It's always a good day.
It's a good day.
It's a good day. One of my favorite things is actually when we have people actually live in person in the studio.
Yes.
To have our podcast here today. We've got, because I love all the guests we have. Well, most of the guests we have. I like it. But I really like when I get to see people face to face, and that's who's with me right now. Dan Rabella. How are you, Dan?
Hey, fantastic. Thank you for having me. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I always feel like a fat slob looking at you. He's just this svelte. He's this svelte specimen of a man, as you would expect someone to be, after having run the great world race. 7 marathons in 7 days on all 7 continents. Dag.
Crazy.
Dirt, do you run at all?
I do run. Not that far.
No? Like, yeah. what's your running regimen?
Like a 5K, like a 3-mile a couple times a week or something.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's cool. So Dan, what was your lead into this? I don't think you just said, "Hey, I'm going to run a marathon on every single continent," or did you? How did you start running?
Yeah, great question. First of all, clarification. It's 7 marathons, 7 continents in 7 consecutive days.
7 consecutive days?
Yeah, back to back to back to back, right?
What is your problem? Are you serious? 7 days?
So when I say this, often people say, okay, what is it, 1 a month, right? So 1 a year? So no,
7 days?
We got on a plane and took us around all 7 continents.
Gosh, forget about the cardio and the muscular challenge of that, just the logistical challenge of doing that. So how does that work in terms of time change? You're flying, like what direction are you flying so you can pick those all up?
Yeah. Well, we started in Antarctica and then up to Cape Town, South Africa, which is the same time zone. And then we flew east to Australia. And from Australia into the Middle East in Istanbul, and then down to Colombia, South America, and up to Miami. So, but to answer your original question, why this race?
Yeah.
First of all, I've been running distance for many years. And in fact, I lost count when I ran my 100th marathon. And so I'm just sort of in a perpetual motion of...
But did you start off saying I want to run marathons, or did you start off as a recreational runner?
Yeah. So at the University of Wisconsin, I was a field goal kicker, and I also ran track. And so it was always about we run, and so we don't jog. There's no such word as jog. We run. And so then when graduated, moved to Chicago... And my wife says, let's go for a jog along the lake. Jog, right?
What's wrong with jog? Why is that so offensive to you?
It's too slow. It's too slow. And so we would go for this jog. And so Bonnie would be out at her pace, and I'd be doing side steps and running backwards, right? And just to keep the fit. And she would get so mad, right? And so as a result, I stopped running in my 20s. But then it was the stress of life, the stress of work. So I've got to find a way to just release this, and get away. And so in my 30s, I think I matured and okay, let's run a little slower. Let's not jog. Let's run slower. And it became my time. And then the distances just started to pile up. Okay, I'm going to run for an hour, right, every day. Let's run for an hour and a half. And I could do thinking.
You had time goals, not distance goals at that
Correct.
Point.
Correct. Oh, okay. Exactly right. And no one could get a hold of me. I intentfully did not bring my phone. I did not have a smartwatch where it would ring on me. It was my time. I could think a lot or not think at all. But it gave me a sense of balance to the craziness of everything that's going on, right, from work to life, et cetera. And it really balanced me to the point where, okay, hey, you know what? Let's actually sign up and join a whole bunch of people and run at the same time. And so my first marathon was in Chicago back in 2005. Mm. We're now 21 years later. It's become so much a part of me, right, and the family that I would say, and I admit, it's an addiction. If I don't get the physical fitness in on a daily basis, I am mentally, physically out of balance. And so the family said, oh, you're running again? I said, well, there could be worse addictions,
right?
I smile, right? Today, I work for IBM. I'm one of the global executives. And so every week I travel internationally. And I love it, right?
Good for you.
So in fact, right after this, I'm flying down to Sao Paulo, Brazil. Last week I was between London and Australia. And in order to be able to do that kind of travel, you need to have a level of fitness. And so for me, it's very committed. Whenever I fly over water, the first thing I do, get to the hotel and go for the run.
Okay.
No matter what the time zone is or how tired I happen to be, whether I got a lot of sleep on the plane or I didn't get sleep on the plane.
You going to treadmill at the hotel or you going out in the streets?
If I can get to the streets, for sure. Couple of places in the world I will not go outside. So like in Mumbai, India.
I was going to say Mumbai. The worst place in the world.
Yeah, just the chaos.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
It's an assault on the senses. You get off that plane and like just get smacked in the face with odors and it's sights you don't want to see. But I know God loves Mumbai and there's good people there. I'm going like those conditions. I don't know anybody who goes there and goes, ooh, yeah, it'd be great to live like that.
Right on. If I can get outside, I'll go outside. Otherwise, there's always the treadmill at the hotel to get it in.
You said it's an addiction. It's a good addiction to have. What happens for you? And have you thought about, you know, as you age and if you've got injuries and spinal issues or whatever, that you may not be able to do this forever, then what happens?
Yeah. Great question. There have been marathons and times when I'm just out running on the streets where I'll see somebody that is physically handicapped running. In fact, Chicago Marathon a few years ago, it's mile 20. This is hard. Am I going to be able to finish? And then I look up ahead of me and there's a lady running with a prosthesis. And I think, you know what? Her situation is probably a lot worse than my situation.
Yeah.
If she can do it, I can do it. And so, in fact, I have a little thing on my watch here, a little band that says, take it, make it. So in the moment, there could be pain and could be stress, but dig deep. You know you've got a goal. Stay committed to the goal, whatever that goal happens to be, in this case, running. And time will pass, right? You will actually feel way, way better mentally that you did complete it versus the sense of failure that, I stopped and I didn't finish.
Yeah.
So I think, and that transcends almost everything that I feel we do in life.
So you're saying you're never stopping running? Never? Just nope, done. It is who they are, done.
You know, that's correct. You know, and part of the training and just I'm a neutral runner. I pay very close attention.
What's that mean, neutral runner?
I don't overpronate. I don't underpronate.
Pronate. I'm sorry, I'm not a runner. You're pronate. You mean your feet turning or how
yes,
you?
Yes, okay. Exactly right. Oh, so okay. when you stride, right, you want your, you know, land, right, for distance runners, not on your heel, midfoot, squarely midfoot, and then roll forward and push off.
All right.
Pronation means that just with your body, you might, instead of landing square, you land on the outside or you land on the inside. Right? And this can create this landing on inside, outside, actually can create extra stresses in your body that you don't notice in the moment, but it builds up over time.
So this is my world. You might have just told me what I did wrong. I went to the airport 2 days ago, went out to Vegas, fun trip. Went to Vegas, I go through security. Security guy goes, "Hey, I need to look at your bag." "Yeah, fine, whatever." They go, "Do you have any?" He's looking through it, can't find what he's looking for. "Is there some zipper in the back?" I said, no, not that you can't see. He's going around. Pulls out a hunting knife. I have a hunting knife in my backpack. I forgot that was in there. It was a handmade knife in Alaska that I picked up when I was in Alaska a couple years ago. And if it was, I want to get the plane. If it's just like a Leatherman that I could replace immediately, I would have thrown it away. Guy said, "Do you want to just throw those away?" I said, no, I'm not throwing that away. So I looked at how much time I have. I'm just gonna take it outside. I'm going to stick it in a planter outside CVG, it's at Cincinnati International Airport, which I've done many times. Except, apparently, they've taken all the planters out of CVG. Too much maintenance. I can't find one. You take your thing, you just jam it under some bark, jam it under some dirt. You come back in a few days, no one's going to mess with it. It's right there. I've done it before. Now I got to take it all the way to the vehicle. So I'm running. I've got a backpack on. I'm running to my car. I don't run. I work out. I do elliptical. But running and my compression of my discs in my back, just not good. So I'm like, but I got to do it. So running, and it wrecked me, man. It wrecked me because I just don't do that. But just that pounding, probably a mile. Cardio, fine. No problem. Cardio, all that's fine. But that motion, because I'm not used to it, just crushed me, didn't help me have a bad back. And I'm carrying a backpack while I'm running. I should have given my backpack to the ATF guy. And also, you just said what you said. I think I'm running wrong because my heel, whenever I have, the last time I did that, my car broke down the side of the road and I had to run 3 miles to a local hardware store to get something to fix it and then run back. I did 3 miles fine, but the same thing, my heel kills me. So I think I'm probably hitting my heel first. I should be having my foot land flat, you're saying, Dan?
Yes. Well, for distance running, right? It's land midfoot and roll forward. If you want to sprint to go fast, you land on the ball of your foot and you roll forward, right?
Okay.
So landing on your heel, we would say as runners, that's going to cause problems for you, right?
So, okay, it has. So midfoot, are you saying my whole foot lands simultaneously or my heel should never touch the ground?
Yeah, well, I mean, simultaneously, right?
Okay.
But you don't want the force, right, landing on your heel and then rolling forward.
I thought that you're supposed to do. No, it's not rolling.
No, you want midfoot and then roll onto your toes. Right. So,
gosh,
and shoes and shoes make a difference.
Well, yeah, there are these shoes right here. They're my Red Wings. That's the one. So, if I had your what are your shoes? What do you use?
Yeah, so I train in Nikes.
All right,
and you can see these shoes. Look at the toe; like they curve up right at the toe to help with that rolling forward.
That's what that's for.
Yeah, exactly. So I train in Adidas or train in Nike, and I race in Adidas.
Now why do you use different shoes?
Superstition.
Yeah, all right.
And I like the feel of the tightness of the type of Adidas shoe that I wear. and they're super, super light. And so
that's cool. It's,
you know, I probably could run, right, in my Nikes if I had to. And in fact, actually, I had to in the Great World Race.
You did.
Because my Adidas shoes have no tread grip on the bottom. Hmm. They're very flat, like a racing shoe. Like you think of it in a car.
Yes.
Like at the Indy 500, there's no tread in them, right? And so that's how my Adidas shoes are. But in Istanbul, in Europe, race four, it rained. It wasn't supposed to rain, but the rain started coming down. So, oh my goodness, right? These shoes, I'll be slipping all over the place. And I realized about the slipping because I wore these exact same shoes at the Chicago Marathon in October, so a month before. And while it was a nice sunny day, going through the water stations, there was water everywhere on the ground, and I actually had some slippage, right? I go, ooh, right?
And you're really gaining that much benefit by having totally flat shoes that you wouldn't just always have a little tread on there?
Well, for us, you know, details are important, right? When we're obsessed with this running. And so if there's a way to create efficiencies, while the efficiency might not be perceived in that specific moment, but we're out there for 3 hours, for 4 hours, right? And that can build up over time. And if you can eliminate some of that little bit of friction for me mentally, actual math you could put behind it and true efficiency, but it's also a mental thing.
Right.
And so I actually switched to Nike shoes last minute because of the rain, which even the other topic at that race, it was supposed to start at 6 p.m., we didn't start until 10 p.m. because A, it was raining, and B, because it was raining, the fishermen were out casting their lines into the sea, and they were right along our planned running path. And so in whatever language, the Turkish language, it wasn't English, right? They're trying to have these debates, right? The course officials, can you move down? Can you leave for a bit? No, right?
Right.
And it's 10 p.m., right? It's midnight. They're still fishing, right? But we ended up, they shrunk down, and we had to shrink the course. Normally, all of our runs were laps, back and forth. We were supposed to do 7 laps along the seacoast. We shrunk it down to 21 laps. Back and forth. But every time we came up to the fishermen, they had the race officials blowing little whistles to let the fishermen know that runners were coming by. And so, tweet, right, will always stick in me, right? So that they wouldn't be casting their lines as we're running by.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Have a hook, grab your earlobe as you're running by. That'd be wonderful.
Right. Yeah, that'd be another chapter in the book if it didn't happen.
So when did the vision for doing the 7 continents happen? Like, I'm sure on year one of you running, it wasn't like you thought, I want to do this someday. Like, when did that idea come in? Because I that's what I'm really fascinated with your story, Dan, is if the runners listen to this, great. If more people run because of this, that's cool too. But what I am always inspired by is someone who goes on a different script. Someone who sees something that they just want to do, and they do it. They aggressively go after it. That's what I'm always inspired by. So for you, when did you see this and say, I want to do this?
I'm a kind of guy that being ordinary, I feel uncomfortable being ordinary. And I want to do extraordinary things, but in a humble way.
Mm, yeah.
And so I said, you know what? I'm basically a pretty fit person. I'm running at least 10 miles a day, very committed. And, you know, if I could find a sponsor, because it's expensive, hey, let's do this. And my employer initially through the marketing organization thought, hey, maybe we would. But one thing led to another, and unfortunately, that did not pan out. And actually for the better, because the sponsor that I did find was the perfect partner for me to be able to prepare. Mm. And that was Beacon Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Mm. They worked with me in putting together a training program that was really, really important. And otherwise, my plan was, I'm just going to run every day, right? Mm-hmm. And so have a long run once a month, a 20-mile run once a month. Other than that, run every day and do my normal CrossFit training that's just part of my routine. And we did an assessment. So there's three parts. One is we're going to put you into a training program. Number two is a recovery program from every workout. And number three, nutrition. And in one race during the 7 days where I did not get the nutrition was between races 4 and 5. This was in Istanbul. Because the way that the continents work, the east side of Istanbul happens to be in Europe. And the west side of Istanbul has to be in Asia. Hmm. And so it was the only time we actually had a hotel room. Otherwise, the hotel room was the plane. And
because that's for 7 days. You're sleeping on planes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and because of the first run in Istanbul, the delay with the fishermen and the rain. We started at 10 p.m. For me, it was just under a four-hour marathon. And so I finished at 2 o'clock in the morning. Race 5 was starting 8 hours later, right? Ugh. And I finished at a time where, Dan, you could either stay here, right, and eat some pizza, which they had pizzas there, or you can get on the bus that's leaving right now, right, for the hotel. And so I jumped on the bus to the hotel. So I missed the pizza and got to the hotel finally at 4:30 in the morning. And by the time I ordered some room service, either it never came or I fell asleep and I didn't hear them knock, right? I missed all nutrition between right after, and then leading up, I was sleeping. And finally, got to get going, right? The race, wake up, it's an hour and a half before we start. I ran down to the lobby, and breakfast was just finishing up, and there's a sunny side up egg on a plate. I grabbed it, right? And that was my nutrition between the two marathons.
An egg. One
sunny side up egg, right? And so race 5, because of the lack of nutrition and the lack of sleep, really, really impacted my performance. Mile 17, I thought, no way, right?
Yeah, you're done.
My body was just cramping up go slow. But I had a mission. One of my stated goals is never walk. Mm. So always run. And no matter if it's slow or fast, in fact, I got to
jog. You could jog then.
Run slow.
Jog. You could jog.
Yes. So I called it ebbing and flowing running. If I felt great, I would speed up, right? If I felt, things are extra stressful, right? We'll slow down. But there was a point where at mile 17, and this is where the mental part of the game comes in, mm-hmm. right? And the mental fortitude. What did we sign up to do? Let's not quit. We don't quit. We finish what we started. Fortunately, there happened to be a medical staffer who doused me with some ice water, right? And so, right? And it brought me back a little bit to my senses. And so while it was a slow run, I kept going. There was one point that later in the race, as we're getting towards the end, a medical staffer, jumped in to run beside me. Hey, Dan, how you doing? And I said, we got to finish. He goes, why don't you just jump into the ocean right here? and cool down because I was overheating.
Oh, wow.
And it was a point where if I were to jump in that ocean, I was probably too weak to ever be able to come back out. Wow. So that was the motivation. Don't go in the ocean. Keep going to finish, right? And that was one where you cross that finish line and you feel relieved. But in this one, I actually just with all the lack of nutrition, the lack of sleep, the extra stress on the body, I passed out for a bit.
Wow.
And then I found myself in the back of a Turkish ambulance and an IV stuck in me. And so, but it was the IV, right? And it re-energized me, and I had no idea what they were saying in their Turkish language, right? But they pulled it out and, jumped out of the back of the ambulance and got on the bus, and we flew to 17 hours to Cartagena, Colombia for the next one. So you got to start all over again.
Are you doing this on your own, or do you have somebody with you?
On my own. Well, I mean, there were 54 of us. Right. I mean, it was a
group. That was my next question. So you're on your own. There's 54 dudes.
Yeah.
Or men, whatever.
Yeah. Right. And I didn't know a single one of them when we said, so it's 54. And then you had the race staff. Right. And there's this group is out of Dublin, Ireland that coordinated the entire event. And so it was a 100 seat plane, and there were, I think, about 90 of us.
Oh, you guys got your own plane.
We had a charter plane.
All right. That's a little better than.
So there were some comforts here.
Okay. Yeah.
So we had a charter plane that took us around, and which we needed because there was no way to do commercial.
Guys slamming shots on there with all the booze included.
Well, here, this plane is a 767 Boeing plane, so it's a big plane, but 100 seats that all the seats went flat into a bed.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, which is important for sleep. In the middle of the plane is and so it's where they would put the food and the drinks and things like this that we needed, right? Yeah. This is the same plane that the Rolling Stones had used on their last world tour.
Wow.
And so you think about it, we as runners, what part of our nutrition, we have a lot of protein powders and stuff like this, right? And so our protein powder is white. Right. And so we're pouring it, right, into our water bottles, and it's spilling on our trays. And we're thinking, I'll bet you this white powder is different than maybe some other flights that have been.
No question.
Yeah. And then after the last flight in Miami, the plane ended up taking off for London because its next trip was to take the football club Chelsea on their week-long tour of matches. So,
and you didn't know any of these people before you did this?
I didn't. However, right, in Antarctica, when we started, everyone's dressed up, right, head to toe. You really can't tell who's who, right? But by race two, race three, race four, and just the camaraderie of being on the plane and sharing the story and the experience. And again, all of our races were laps back and forth, so they could contain the aid stations.
Okay. All of them were, okay.
Yeah, none of them were point to point.
Oh, okay.
Right? They were, I think the longest one was 5 laps back and forth, right? All the way down to 21 laps. And
so shortest one is a little over a mile loop, longest one is 5.5 miles or something like that.
Exactly. Like almost like a 10K.
Yeah.
Because you're passing each other. Everyone's at different paces. You've got world-class runners here, right? And you've got the true ultra distance marathoners that are slow like turtles, but just keep going. And then there are guys like me. But you're passing each other. And in the beginning in Antarctica with the 4 laps that we did, it was barely a hand raise or recognition as people are passing. But by race 3, 4, 5, and in 7, it was high five, smiling, how you doing? You doing okay? Keep it going.
That's cool.
Everyone knew each other's, by first name, right? And while it was competitive, there's always a competitive component in what we do. The camaraderie was really, really amazing. To the point where I didn't know any of them. By the end, while we were very relieved, we finished this, There was also a sad component because we were thrown together, right? And we had this common, intense, physical, mental experience that we were sharing together that we're not going to see each other again, right, on the plane or on a daily basis. And in fact, like just the camaraderie after I came out of the ambulance in Istanbul, there were I don't know how many of them, maybe could have been almost all of them, were all there. Hey, clear and chapping, you know, clapping their hands. Come on, Dan, you're feeling good. You're feeling good. Let's go. Right. What do you need? Yeah. Right. It really, you know, it's physical and it's mental, challenging both. And you're with somebody, like at Man Camp, for example, right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it takes a whole nother perspective of meaning that this is super important. We're not going to quit. We're going to galvanize, and
right.
we become actually better people because of the camaraderie and the commitment to that experience. Life can be really, really good as a result of going through potentially this very tough situation. Let's learn from it, even to while it seems like an unfair situation, we actually become better people. Let me give you another example. A little bit off topic, but still running. Again, I've run the Boston Marathon every year for 15 years. This will be year 16.
Which is tough to qualify for.
Yeah, yeah. But year 2013 was the Boston Marathon bombing year. And I'd finished an hour before, right at 3 hours. The bombing actually happened an hour 4 into the marathon. And normally, I always go back to the hotel, throw up, go to sleep. My father taught me, he's my high school football coach in northern Wisconsin, said, you leave it all out on the field, no matter what. And so the last miles, right, it's all out sprint,
okay.
right? And so no matter how good you're feeling or rough you're feeling, you sprint and you finish it, you leave it on the course, right? You can rest later.
Right.
Right.
So, why does that mean you throw up at the hotel?
Oh, it's because I'm just physically, you know, out of it. Right.
All right, okay.
And but this one, right? It was a good race for me. I didn't throw up. I went to the hotel and I got my phone. So you know what? I'm going to go back to the course to watch friends come through. And I still was wearing my medal. I was very proud. And I got into the VIP area right across from the finish line. And so I was actually in the stands directly across from the first bomb when it went off. And this intense wave of heat, right?
Really?
Just comes flashing at us. And we're all scrambling down onto Boylston Street. And I lost my phone. And I've never been a first responder. I really didn't know how to handle what I was experiencing. And so the second bomb goes off. And just out of panic, you know, I left. I got off the street. Went back to my hotel.
Well, that's not out of panic. That's out of intelligence.
Well,
you leave. You leave the war zone, but you can't.
Yeah, but okay. So for the rest of the story, I lost my phone. I went back and I found my phone.
Of course, that's why you went back. Not for the people, for the phone. I got to go back because I need my phone.
Exactly.
I don't want to help anybody, but I got some tweets I got to tell the world about because I'm going to change the world here.
That's right. But because of all of that self-centeredness, right, I had incredible stress of survivor's guilt. And why didn't I do more, right? I should have been there to, you know, to help out, to do something, right? But I was afraid, right? And I got off the street. And so a couple days later when I was able to leave after they lifted the martial law, I was in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm sitting in the CIO's office of one of our customers, and he's drawing on this board his strategic plan. And I'm going, man, WTF. What this he has no idea what just happened here and the importance of life. And he's working on this big overall grandiose strategy. And I was really, man, just shaking my head. But then by the end of the meeting, I found myself engaging up on the whiteboard. So I was on this major mental roller coaster, scheduling meetings, canceling meetings, scheduling meetings, canceling. My leadership said, Dan, right, you need to go home. I said, no, I've got these meetings. Go home. So I came back to Cincinnati and for 2 weeks went through some major mental gymnastics to put in perspective this senseless, you know, act of what I experienced. Wasn't part of the plan. And so why did this happen? It makes no sense. I'm very angry. But through the mental gymnastics, I'm actually now, I know, a much better person of experiencing that tragedy, that struggle in my life.
Yeah.
And it's for many people, when they face adversity, whether, you know, and adversity is on many different levels, whether it's financial or relationships or job or whatever it happens to be, that there's just a way to rethink about the situation that you can, let's learn from this, even though it's, we think it's a loss, right? And a major tragedy, because you're taking the time to learn what happened, and there's a way that as a result, you actually now become a better person from that tragedy, that you can live your life even in a happier, more fulfilling way going forward.
Your story of just trying to tweak things, try something different, go forward with something, do something that's difficult, do something that's hard. Boy, that's a message and a practice that more of us need to embrace. Just doing something hard because it's hard.
Yeah. And a thing that has really come out of this for me, right? From the Boston bombing through just the distance training and this amazing, you know, 7-day event is take on the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Sign up for it.
Yeah.
But make sure that you also prepare, right? And have a team around you.
Right.
So because that support is so, so important, right? To make sure that you've got a strong mental capacity. I think in anything, I always say things are a marathon. And we can always, let's complete what we started and we can rest later.
Yeah.
Right? Let's not have the weak mind to stop, right? Let's be committed, right? And we need to support people to help us, yeah, right, in that commitment. And we can always, always rest later.
Like it or not, we're all going to have hard things to do in life. It's going to happen. We're going to get some diagnosis we don't want. Someone's going to get hurt, killed that we don't want. We're going to have something that we lose. There's going to be hard things. Yeah. But we can also be more likely to perform in those hard things where weren't wanted if we opt in for something that is hard. That exactly gives us that. Like when you talk about your commitment to just run, I think about the power of trust. Like you just learn to trust your voice and said, no, I must say this, I'm going to do that. There's great resiliency that comes and you can learn to trust your voice. Sometimes I'll just say that when I'm on the, I would say a treadmill. I used to do this when I used to be on a treadmill. Like I said, I don't run anymore. But if I'm in a workout, I'll say it, you know, I'll say it. 20 minutes. Say it. So trust my voice. Right. Say it. Carrying 80 pounds in each hand. Doing it, you know, just say that thing to where you trust your voice and you stop fighting with yourself. Oh, I said it. I got to do it.
Right on.
That's a resiliency. Let's go back to Antarctica. Antarctica. Are you in snowshoes? Are you in running cleats? How do you do this?
Oh, my goodness. Right? It was a big unknown. Now, I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I was born in Green Bay. And I'm used to cold.
Yeah.
Right? Not that I could handle cold. No problem. But And there's a lot of, you know, advice, right, about what to wear, what not to wear, and things along those lines. And so I thought that I was well prepared for with what I was wearing. But when I came around the corner on the plane to the walk down to the plane and the door was open, the intensity went right through
really?
Everything that I was wearing. And by the way—
Oh, what's the temperature?
It was about minus 22, right? And here's the other thing about being prepared, right? And things can change in the moment. We all met in Cape Town, South Africa, and 2 days before we're supposed to start. And we get together. The first thing that the race director says, "I've got news for everybody. A major weather storm system is coming into Antarctica. And so we have to move up all 7 days, 1 day early." Mm. So whether you're ready or not, we're on a plane tonight.
Wow. Right?
Or the first thing in the morning, early morning, to fly to, because we have this window. If we don't get in before the storm comes in, we have to delay the whole thing, right, for a week. And so, all right. But we land, right, and it's minus 20, 22 degrees. But it wasn't all that windy. And so we got going. Oh, and by the way, the area, the Wolfsfang that supported us, it was called the White Desert. The reason why it's called the White Desert is it's white because of the snow and ice, but it's desert because it's ultra, ultra dry, right? And so we actually ran on ice that they chopped up, ground up, right, to give us a little bit of traction, which running it felt like we were running in sand, all right? So it wasn't always a solid foot, right, and then plant off, right? When you plant and you roll forward, you're slipping a little bit, right? And so you got this little give all, you know, all the time. And so by halfway, about mile 13, 14, the winds came in, right? The storm was coming. And so with the and so the temperature drops and the wind chill. We are into the minus, you know, 40, high 40s, minus 50 gosh. Degrees. Right. And
by you have like you running with like a parka on, like full blown down mittens and stuff. Like what are you wearing?
Yeah. So I had three layers. Right. A smart wool layer on the skin. Right. That would keep you warm, but take sweat away from you.
A little wicking.
Right.
Yeah.
A wicking. And then another neoprene shirt and then my jacket. Right.
Jacket. Describe jacket.
It was a very fit running tight jacket.
All right.
Right. That would not catch wind.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, but it was a shell, but at the same time shell, because you wanted a shell material so that that also helps to prevent wind from, you know, seeping in.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
And in my gloves, I had gloves that you put in your hands and you got the fingers. And then there's a little flap that comes over your fingers. So it's kind of like, acts like a mitten. Mm-hmm. And then I had these other Eddie Bauer big down leather things, right? Right? And so, and it got so warm that at the beginning, right, I was sweating, right? That when the wind hit, now I've got, my hands were sweating. My arms were sweating. Even though it was away from my body, there's all this was being captured inside of me because of the shell that I had and all my gloves. That when the wind came, it just froze me, right? And I could feel. And by the way, it got so cold that by mile five, my liquid nutrition that I had with me froze. Into popsicles.
Yeah.
Right. And so I missed the nutrition that I normally would have during a race. The best part of that whole race was finishing and doing a snow angel after I finished it. You get to get down on the ground and just, okay.
Brutal.
Right.
What was the, was that the worst of the seven or is there another one that was worse?
Yeah. Because I'd never been to Antarctica because of these extreme weather. By far, it was the worst. And I think the race organizers appreciated that, and that's why it was number one. Let's get it out of the way.
I like that.
Right? Because it's only going to get better from there. Now, if you ask me which one would I do again, it would be Antarctica. So
just the full experience of it.
The experience of it, and the challenge of let's do it better.
Yeah.
Next time.
What is the, you know, you're going about your normal job, your normal family life, all that stuff. Is there any lessons that you've learned or ways that this experience formed you that you could say, yeah, I'm better at this now because of that? Or that experience helped me to look at this thing differently. Is there any apples to apples translations?
Yeah. Don't do it alone. You need a support team. And so, because if you try to do it alone, right, you could actually put yourself in a lot of danger,
right?
Physically, mentally. And you can just apply that to anything in life, that make sure you find that support system that you can truly, transparently make sure that you can communicate with them. And when there are some little physical hard tasks, don't say, ah, no, right? No, hey, great. It's an opportunity to CrossFit, right? And to stay fit physically and mentally.
Dan, if someone wants to follow up more with you or know more about your journeys and everything, is there any place they can go?
Yeah, you know what? I'm on LinkedIn, and then I'm also on Instagram. So dan.rebella.
Well, Dan, it's good meeting you and good hearing about an area of life I normally wouldn't be inside of, but I learned and appreciated the time and appreciate you. So well done, man. Hey, and everybody out there, you may not want to do a marathon ever or let alone 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents, but maybe there's something difficult you should do. Maybe something different you should try. Let's get after that. Welcome to the Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at briantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt, that's dirt, at briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram at briantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.